Hi, this is Eric Stein for the Pictures in My Head Radio Theater. Today, the name of our story is The Crossing. The action takes place sometime in the future, 100 years or so from now. The setting is a science research base located in the 13-mile-wide Shackleton Crater, a deep, deep hole on the underside of the moon. The base has a population of about 5,000 souls, technicians, scientists, maintenance, and support staff. Some of them live in research outposts scattered outside the crater, but most of them live in the central base and in an adjoining network of underground warrens and tunnels dug into the crater's walls. Our story begins in the base's communication center, which is being manned by one Bernie Grant, communications technician first class. The base's AI, its artificial intelligence, is a supercomputer who goes by the name of Artie. Artie is sounding an alarm that will awaken Grant from the twilight of his late shift snooze.
Attention, acknowledge. Attention, acknowledge.
Okay, I'm listening, Artie. What is it?
Gravitational anomaly approaching. Please advise.
How much gravity are we talking about here?
Approximately 1.2 solar masses.
It's heavier than the sun?
Affirmative.
Well, what do you think it is?
A neutron star.
Are you sure?
Probability range 93 to 95%.
And just where does it appear to be heading?
It will cross the plane of the solar system, out near the orbit of Mars.
Is it likely to come close enough to cause us harm?
Likelihood greater than 70%.
Lethal harm?
Presently unknown.
How fast is it moving?
0.01c.
1% of the speed of light? Are you kidding?
I am not authorized to tell jokes.
Right. Well, unless it's also a pulsar, it's not going to destroy us or the Earth. But if it is, it could be close enough to give us a hell of a sunburn. Any chance of any impact on Mars?
Negative.
Can you estimate the level of our exposure to radiation?
Negative.
Well, will you know soon?
The word soon indicates an undetermined amount of time. So yes, we will know soon.
That's funny, Artie.
I am not authorized to tell jokes.
No, well, you're going to have to work on that. Now, can you estimate an arrival time?
Approximately 23.15 standard hours.
Oh, Judas Priest. All right. Inform Base Commander Parks and Chief Scientist Hamilton. Send each of them a technical summary, highest priority. Oh, and send a technical summary, Earthside. Mark it extremely urgent. I'll contact them directly. Maybe they'll know something about this. Let's see, okay. Oh, Margot Wright is on shift. Come on, Margot. Answer the comm.
Earthside, Margot Wright here. Go ahead, Shackleton.
Margot, this is Bernie Grant speaking. Do you know anything about a neutron star heading our way?
Very funny.
Okay, so you don't know anything. We sent you a summary, and I need you to get it to the director's office right away. Interrupt whatever he's doing.
You know, the director's office has zero sense of humor about stunts like this. But if I alert the director, and this isn't real...
Margot, stop. I get it. But this is real enough, all right. Look, if this neutron star is spewing radiation, then a lot of lives could be saved by sheltering in place, and I think the director would want to know that. And if the worst thing happens, then we're all going to be fried to a crisp anyway. So he's not going to be upset with your interrupting him.
Oh, I just got the summary. You're not kidding. I'll forward the message right away. I'm sorry. You guys take care.
Okay, Artie, let's figure this out. The central base, as well as some of the deeper tunnels, will be the safest places to shield all of Shackleton's occupants. We're going to need an evacuation plan that lets us move the most people in the least amount of time. Plans should include central base personnel, as well as research teams on the off-base outposts. Make the plan.
Shall I include the tourists?
Tourists?
The winners of the Moonshot Lottery.
Ah, stinky flying monkeys. The lottery. Don't tell me those people are here today.
As you wish.
Well, they're getting more than a ticket's worth on this trip. Yes, include the tourists.
Task completed.
Commander Parks.
Status, Mr. Grant.
Summary sent to you and Dr. Hamilton, ma'am. Earthside apprised of the situation.
Artie, any acknowledgement from Earthside?
Affirmative, Commander. Earthside will monitor the anomaly status. My link to their AI computer has been given top priority.
And our on-base communications, Grant?
You're the first to acknowledge the alert, ma'am.
We'll have to wake everyone up right away.
Commander, I had Artie make an evacuation list, including the on-base personnel and the off-base research outposts. It's on the display.
Very good, Mr. Grant. Oh, look at this list. This is going to take hours. Blast those Earthside politicos.
Ma'am?
We had a rapid evacuation plan in place, and we had started fabricating evacuation vehicles. But when the Earthside administration changed, the new money boys decided that our efforts would be better spent on what? On making mining gear.
So?
So we're left with nothing but the pokey lunar rovers and a few low-altitude hoppers, none of which accommodate many passengers. If what's coming is dangerous, we'll be cutting it awfully close. Just about now, I wish there were two of me. What's your background, Grant?
My what?
Background.
Oh, I have a bachelor's degree in physics, 7 years as a tech liaison with MIT, and then 3 years in the service here.
You know what a neutron star is?
Yes, ma'am.
A pulsar?
Yes, ma'am.
And do you know why, say, an understanding of Newton's inverse square law might be helpful today?
Sure. I1 times D1 squared equals I2 times D2 squared. Once we figure out how close the thing is going to come and just how much juice it's putting out, we can calculate with I the intensities and D the distances and have a pretty good idea of how much wallop it's going to pack, and we can plan our defenses against it accordingly.
That was pretty quick for a bachelor's in physics.
Yes, ma'am. I finished the coursework for my PhD, lunar habitat development, but our project got defunded. I had to go to work, student loans and all that. I'm sorry. It's a source of embarrassment with me.
Never mind that, Grant. Do you know how to pilot a hopper?
No, ma'am.
Do you know how to drive a rover?
No, ma'am.
Then it's settled. You're staying here. I've got 14 spare rovers and 12 low-altitude hoppers. That's 26 rides, but I only have 25 crew. I'll have to pilot one of the hoppers and run the rescue out there. Maybe we can keep everybody safe.
Doesn't each outpost have its own vehicle?
Nope. A lot of them were just drop them off and pick them up. Anyway, I'm leaving you in charge here.
In charge?
Yes, there isn't anybody else.
Ma'am?
The population of the base is around 5,000, but there's not a lot of us military here. I was expecting more help on tomorrow's shuttle, but there's no time for that. You're smarter than your job, Grant. I've seen that before. Ordinarily, gambling on you would not be my first choice, but there's nothing ordinary about this pickle we're in.
Agreed, ma'am.
You'll call in the closer outposts and coordinate base preparation with engineering and life support. Oh, and Grant, if we do get through this safe and sound, I'm gonna buy you dinner.
So, Artie, I'm in charge here, huh?
Your observation squares with the official record.
Sounds like word has gotten out. Let the fun begin. Grant here. We'll be back shortly with more of our story, The Crossing. But first, there's this.
Thank you. I spent the first few days of lockdown rather frenetically turning my home into a makeshift music studio and tying up some loose ends for my business. And once I'd done that, the reality of the situation started to kick in, that this wasn't just an inconvenience that would be over in a month or two, but a real global disaster that no one was going to come out of unscathed in some way. So I had to stop watching TV for a while, or at least limit my exposure to the reporting of statistics and cases and deaths, just endless numbers being read out every day. And the human cost seemed to take a back seat to the stats. And I found myself becoming numb to it, and that just didn't feel right at all. You know, I'm human and I'm supposed to be shocked and horrified by suffering. As I said before, everyone is affected by this, whether through loss of a loved one, being unable to be by their side when they die, or attend their funeral in person, loss of livelihood, loss of motivation, whether professional or personal, loss of social interaction. So I found a way of absorbing the horrors and dealing with it through music making, which has always been my go-to method of dealing with things. The arts and entertainment sector has been very badly hit by this, and that's obviously not just here in the UK, it's all over. Many of my friends and colleagues have had literally all their work for the rest of the year completely wiped out. We are, as a community though, very resourceful, and we'll bounce back with our songs, our symphonies, our gigs and festivals, our ballets, shows, plays and musicals, our karaoke nights and poetry reading, our exhibitions. But it is going to be different. And I guess it's up to us to make it a good kind of different, the kind of different that works for us rather than one that we settle for.
That was Lucinda Gallant, also known as Dare Summer, the singer-songwriter. She's the owner, operator, and chief engineer at the Last Date recording studio in London, where the previous piece was recorded.
The piece is called Slam, and it was written by Gary Eyster for multi-instrumentalist Philip Marguerre. Philip played both instruments on that track, the piano and an instrument made of tuned glass tubes called the verophone.
And we want to thank you for joining us for this stay-at-home version of the Pictures in My Head radio theater. Our drama, The Crossing, is based on a short story by local author Michael Glaviano.
The performances came in various ways, from an ad hoc recording space in a garage, from a home studio, over the internet. Some of the actors even phoned it in.
You're listening to KCBX, public radio for California's Central Coast. And now, let's get back to the moon.
In the previous episode of The Crossing, the artificial intelligence at Lunar Base Shackleton identified a possible mortal threat to the base, a neutron star that was fast approaching the solar system, barreling at a breakneck speed in the direction of the Earth and the Moon. Base Commander Naomi Parks has taken charge of the rescue mission, the task of gathering in researchers from the base's far-flung satellite outposts, leaving communications technician Bernie Grant in charge of organizing the efforts at the core facility.
Artie, status update on science team evacuations.
Order sent to all teams. Acknowledgement and compliance by all but one.
Who?
Team leader, Dr. Thomas Wilson.
What the hell could he be thinking? Put me through.
Wilson here.
Dr. Wilson, this is communications technician Grant. Evacuation order sent 15 minutes ago. Acknowledge.
I got it.
Advise, estimated time for your evacuation.
I can't say just now.
Sir, we're in situation critical.
Sorry.
Sir, you have a direct order from Dr. Hamilton.
Hamilton's a toad and a fraud.
What?
He's been itching to shut down my experiment for months now. He's afraid my results will show how shoddy his work is.
I don't know anything about that, sir, but I know you and your assistants need to grab what you can and come back to base as soon as possible.
What was your name again?
Grant. Bernie Grant.
And just who, Mr. Grant, are you exactly?
I'm the communications technician on duty.
You're the what? Connect me to Commander Parks immediately.
Please listen carefully. In less than 20 hours, a high-mass object will pass through the inner solar system. It could well be a high-radiation event. I can't overemphasize the danger you're in.
Don't get melodramatic with me, young man. We're 6 hours from the crater wall. We have a rover.
Roger, we're well aware, and your rover is needed to bring in other staff. Look, you're wasting time here that could cost someone else their life. Is your experiment worth a life?
Well, it's been worth my life, dammit.
All right, Dr. Wilson, if you insist on ignoring my instructions, the best thing that can happen to you will be that you'll never set foot on the moon again. Now, please, you can pick up the pieces of your work. It's that or we'll be out there picking up pieces of you or some other poor soul who we couldn't rescue because you had to take some readings. Do you insist that your assistants die for your work as well?
Damn it. We're coming in.
Man, I need some coffee.
Status of gravitational anomaly verified. Please advise.
What do you know?
Radiation detected. Neutron star. Pulsar.
I was afraid of that. The radiation could be severe. Have you homed in on the object's trajectory?
Negative.
Well, when do you expect to know?
We'll have acceptable estimates in 6 to 8 hours.
All right. We better prepare for the worst. Send Parks and Hamilton the details. Oh, and copy engineering and life support on that, too. Get me Parks on the line.
Parks here.
Commander, this is ComTech Grant. Neutron star confirmed. A pulsar.
Do we know exactly where it's headed yet?
Negative.
It's time to harden the base. Do whatever it takes. Don't worry about the blowback on that. I'll take the heat.
Well, there'll be plenty of heat to go around. By the way, how's the gathering in proceeding?
These scientists are tough nuts to crack. I never saw people so slow and reluctant to understand that their lives could actually be in jeopardy.
Roger that, ma'am.
Oh, well. If we keep pushing, we'll make it. By the way, I've submitted your name to records. An emergency field promotion. Assistant Commander. The point is, it'll make it clear to all base personnel that you're acting on my authority.
I'll do my best, ma'am.
Artie, patch me through to engineering.
Engineering. Spotter here.
Mr. Baker, this is Commander Parks. As you know, we'll soon be in for quite a ride. I'm busy out here hauling in scientists, and I've deputized ComTech Bernie Grant to be my assistant commander. Consider his instructions to be my instructions.
Indeed I shall, ma'am.
Parks out.
Mr. Spider?
Just Spider. I've been reading your reports, Grant. It's good work, man. More than I expected from a ComTech.
Thanks.
Now, you say we got us a tiny star, pulsar. That's some serious radiation. If that radiation hits us bang on, we're toast.
Well, we're going to act like the crater walls will take the brunt of it.
Is that a likelihood or a guess?
That's just a guess. But if that beam of radiation hits us directly, it doesn't matter what we do to prepare. That will be the end of us. But we can prepare for a glancing blow, just in case that's what happens. Which technical resources need protecting, and what can we do to protect them?
Well, first and foremost, it's the solar arrays. Without electricity, we have nothing. No oxygen, no water, no food, no heat, no light, no sound, no nothing.
And what can we do to protect the arrays?
Nothing. Pretty much nothing. The whole array is too damn big to replace. If the damage is severe, we can run on batteries for a while. But we can only hope that we have sufficient spare panels to cover the damage we might sustain. If we lose 30 or 40%, we change our lifestyle, but we don't necessarily have to die.
Artie. Get me Bernice Morley in life support.
Morley here.
Morley, this is Grant in the comms center.
Congratulations on your promotion, Assistant Commander Grant. Commander Parks told me to do whatever I can for you. I'm all ears.
Thanks, Morley. Spider in engineering is on the line with us. We're hardening the base, and I need to know the vulnerability of your most essential facilities.
All our facilities are essential, Mr. Grant. Food, air, water, and climate control. Our motto is, if you want to eat it, or drink it, or breathe it, we got it. At any rate, we've built in protections. Our facilities are all underground, shielded by a multi-layer shell that's harder than most diamonds and fairly deep inside the crater. As long as Spider can keep feeding us the juice, we're the most secure department on the moon.
And if the power should be interrupted?
We have lots of stored water and food. If you can get by on pellets. The base's backup batteries are good for about 18 days of operation. Isn't that about right, Mr. Spider?
Just Spider. Yes, 18 days or so.
Spider, would 18 days be enough time to get the array up and running if we took a hit on our solar panels?
Depends on the size of the hit, of course. We can crank out extra panels rather quickly, but that requires a lot of electricity.
Well, for the moment, we have a lot of electricity. So find a good balance between hardening the superstructure and cranking out backup solar panels. Now, Morley, looking further out, how long can you guys provide us with life support before you need some kind of input from Earth's side?
How long do you got?
Come again?
Right. No one reads my memos. As of a couple of months ago, Shackleton Life Support was fully self-sufficient. We can feed you and keep you warm for just as long as you can snore and grow your beard.
You mean indefinitely?
I do.
Well, that's an excellent piece of news. We can use as much of that as we can get. Okay, folks, let's get cracking. Morley, make as much extra food as you can store. Spider, get your crews to harden as much of the surface of the central base as you can. Both of you, monitor your power consumption. It has to stay below the solar array's output. We don't want to deplete our backup. And Spider, if you think that your crews are making sufficient progress, let them rest in shifts. We'll need them alert and ready if the bullet only grazes us. After 21 hours, get your guys off the surface. You'll have less than an hour to do that. Have them go directly from the surface to their emergency stations. Send me hourly reports, emphasis on just where on the base the population can most likely find effective shelter.
Sounds like we just might survive this thing.
Well, I hope you're right, Morley, but how this finishes is not exactly up to us. It's really the neutron star that's in charge here. The best that we can do is to shelter in place against it and hope that this moon base can deliver us alive.
And now for a change of pace, a fable, a silly little opera made just for the occasion by Gary Eyster.
The opera is called Bob Drops His Name at the Pearly Gates. It features Bay Area soprano Ann Moss as an angel.
And Gary as the newly dead Bob, who is trudging up the road on his way to heaven.
Something told me, just keep walking. I would hear something, and then I'd see it. But before I saw it, I would need to speak my name. My, it's pleasant here. The air is sweet, the sky is clear. It's warm, but not too warm. Lovely day for a walk. There it is, I heard it, and now I'm supposed to see it. Oh, that's right, I'm supposed to say my name. My name is Bob, I'm over here. She's beautiful, but I guess that means I'm dead now.
Ah.
Why would I think I was dead? Well,
I remember falling out a window.
Then everything went dark, and suddenly I'm here, walking down this road, and just as suddenly you appear.
With your gossamer wings, your flowing gown, your radiant shining halo. Your feet, they aren't even touching the ground.
And those gates that you're standing in front of, those gates there seem to be pearly.
And aren't those slippers made of gold?
Made of gold. Sure, I'd like to come in.
There's a price I have to pay.
I have to tell you a story.
No, not the one about the girl.
That's such an ugly story. All right, all right. I'll tell it. But
I don't remember if this was even real. It comes from oh so long ago. I just can't say. But whether real or not, it is a cancer on my heart. A dull pain, a nightmare that just won't go away. Oh, I remember the darkness of the day. My car broke down, my phone was dead, so I got walking. I walked for hours until the sun went down. I was the only person on that lonely road. Now it was getting cold, my body's aching, when I saw a light in the distance, a hole in the hillside, flickering angry red. As I got closer, there was some music. Dancing shadows, filthy smells of things not too long dead. A scabby arm dragged me inside. The room was filled with fat, fleshy people. In the center of the room, there was a girl in a flimsy nightgown. She was tightly bound on an altar, where she shivered and shook. She bucked and writhed. She was terrified. Then a giant of a man grabbed me by the arm, and his ugly little friend took a hold of my hand. Then he put a knife into my hand, and the giant man took me by the hand and plunged the knife into the screaming girl. Then everything went limp. That really couldn't have happened, could it? It must have been a dream, or an hallucination, or just some misplaced memory of some dumb TV show that I saw when I was a kid. Anyway, the next thing I know, I was waking up in my car. I heard a tapping on the window. I squinted at the beam of a flashlight. It was the sheriff's deputy wondering if I was all right. He called a tow truck, got me home, and that was my night. But why did you want me to tell you such an ugly story?
I wanted you to take that ugly story from your heart, to set it on the cloud and leave it behind.
What was that? Did you just say something about an ugly story? What were you talking about?
The story that you just told me about the night and the suffering girl.
Suffering girl? Nope, doesn't ring a bell.
That's because it's gone now. It vanished in that cloud.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
That's okay.
What did you say the name of this place was?
This is heaven.
Never heard of it. What kind of a place is it?
This is where we confer forgiveness. This is where we do forgetting. You can't have one without the other. Heaven is where we forgive and forget.
Yeah, I'd like to come in. Here, let me get the gate for you. Oh, you jumped right over. That was pretty good.
That was Anne Moss and Gary Eyster in Gary's little opera, Bob Drops His Name at the Pearly Gates.
You're listening to KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. And now, let's get back to The Crossing. In the previous episode of The Crossing, Bernie Grant, now Assistant Commander Grant, is engaged in overseeing survival preparations on the Shackleton Lunar Research Station. The station is facing lethal radiation effects emanating from a pulsar, a neutron star that is hurtling through space, passing dangerously close to their location on the moon. The neutron star was detected only hours ago, and only a few hours remain until it arrives. Grant does his job at the base's communication hub, assisted by the base's artificial intelligence computer, a disembodied voice named Artie.
Talk to me, Artie.
Neutron star's path determined.
Uh-huh.
It is within roughly 100,000 kilometers.
Okay.
It is still on the outer side of Mars' orbital path.
And will it impact any major object in the solar system?
Negative.
Well, thank God for that. We might just be safe, huh?
Is that an inquiry?
Sure, I guess. Will we be safe?
Define the word we.
Well, first tell me, will Shackleton be safe?
Survival probability for both the base and personnel is 99%.
No damage?
Some damage, likely.
List the top three bad effects in order of severity.
Destruction of approximately 30% of Earth-facing solar panels.
Good. That's within our safety limit.
Power surge will damage 10% of electrical storage capacity.
Okay, we can live with that.
Lunar landing facility destroyed.
You mean no more connection to the Earth? Estimate how soon we can expect to be able to get our landing facility functional.
Estimated repair time of the landing facility, as little as 16 months.
So that's when we'll be able to connect with the Earth again.
Best case projection of connection with Earth, 10 months to multiple decades for radio contact.
What?
Resumption of lunar Earthside travel, impossible to predict.
Why? What's going to happen Earthside?
Effects will range between acute radiation poisoning and certain death.
No.
The edge of the pulsar's beam will sweep over a portion of the Earth's surface.
No.
All locations in the northern hemisphere will receive between 500 and 1500 rads.
That's too much.
There will be an 85% reduction of the ozone shield. A high percentage of the Earth's population will perish instantly.
Oh, my God.
Without the protective ozone shield, the survivors will need to go underground. Extreme weather will disrupt most surface agriculture. Many survivors of the initial shock will starve to death until food shortage problem is solved.
Send this information up to Parks immediately. Mark it highest priority.
Task accomplished.
What the hell are we supposed to do now?
Suggest continue sheltering preparations.
Right. Okay. Let's start with a complete station map. Indicate areas that engineering has hardened. Display current locations of...
Commander Parks on the line.
Oh, patch her through. Grant here.
Bernie, this is Parks. I can't believe what I'm reading.
Me neither, ma'am.
Commander Clifton for Commander Parks.
I'll take this privately.
Margot Wright for Assistant Commander Grant.
I'll take it.
Grant, is that you?
Yes, Margot.
That call earlier about the neutron star and the radiation?
Yeah.
What more have you heard up there?
What do you mean?
Does your read on this situation square with mine? From what I gather, from the bits and pieces that I've heard, our AI computer is spouting doom and destruction. Do you know if the brass really believe what the computers are saying? That maybe a lot of us are not going to survive?
Margot, please, I...
Is there something that you're not telling me? Grant, I don't want to die.
No, no one wants that.
Grant, I've got a little kid. She's only 9, but her level 4 test scores have come up this year. She's worked really hard. I worked really hard. I'm only 2 steps short of qualifying for the management training. God, Grant, none of this matters, does it?
Margot.
Grant, I'm afraid. I'm too young for this. My daughter won't even get a chance.
Margot, none of us knows the future.
Those AI computers think they do.
I know.
And the brass think they do.
I know.
The brass isn't telling us what's happening here, and they're not telling us what's happening on the moon. I've heard orders to ground all air travel. I've heard orders about some kind of bunker access. I didn't even know there were bunkers. I've overheard enormous numbers and something about casualties. Please, Grant, please. Do you know anything? Are you expecting casualties on the moon?
Well, I heard that there's a chance of casualties.
Sorry, I'm being paged. Call me if you learn anything. Please. They're cutting me off. I have to go. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Margot.
Thank you.
That was Anya and Arek Szafraniec, the glass duo of Gdansk, Poland, playing Gary Eyster's Sorrow.
It's a fantasia on a song by Frédéric Chopin for crystal wine glasses, flute, oboe, viola, and cello.
Like many musicians, the glass duo is sheltering in place at home.
Even though our life has completely changed since beginning of COVID-19, beginning of pandemic, you know that we used to live pretty active life before, playing concerts and traveling a lot. Now we stay home. We do our grocery shopping just twice a month. And unfortunately, we stopped meeting friends and even family. Anyway, we try to think positively, and we do many things like working on a new glass harp project.
Recordings, new arrangements.
Yes. Also some funny things like making natural soaps by hands or baking bread. The good thing is the place we live in, you know, the view from our window, the forest, we can see it every morning. That is something what make us really happy and relaxed. And now we can enjoy this beautiful view.
You know, the situation in Poland is not really, really good as freelancers. We have no job. Our concerts are canceled, all of them. And it doesn't look like we can expect any changes soon. Our government declares supporting cultural institutions and the artists, but you know, it really doesn't seem to be truly optimistic, and we rather cannot count on any help from them.
Yeah, but from the other side, it makes us even more creative, I can say. We never know how the future will look like, and I think people all around the world face to such a reflection. And for us, the most important thing is to keep believing that the pandemic will not destroy the very basic values in our lives.
This is KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. And now the final episode of The Crossing.
In the previous episode of The Crossing, Assistant Commander Bernie Grant learned that the radiation emanating from a passing neutron star would savagely decimate most life on the Earth, but leave his lunar research base relatively unscathed. Preparations have been made to shield the base and its 5,000 souls from the effects of the lethal radiation. The base commander, Naomi Parks, has been occupied leading a rescue effort to save the lives of scientists who were working in small facilities outside the central base proper. Grant had accomplished the task of evacuating all personnel into their cramped sheltering spaces. But as the moment approached, the moment of the passing of the death-dealing star, Grant worries that Commander Parks has yet to return to the base. Time is short, and he needs to get in touch with her.
Artie, can you get me Commander Parks?
Negative.
Negative? We've only moments to go. You have a record of her last known location, right?
Minus 15 south, minus 158 east.
And what's the estimated time from there to the base on a hopper?
Approximately 6.2 hours.
Man, those hoppers are slow. That's not enough time for them to get back. Estimate her chances of survival.
Estimate impossible. Too many variables.
Evacuation status report.
Accomplished. All personnel are sheltering in place and have been issued a summary of reasonable immediate expectations.
And how much time till event?
Approximately 1 minute.
Okay, put me on the base-wide comm. All personnel, this is Assistant Commander Grant. Brace for gravity anomaly. Sit in a fetal position on the floor. Hold the position until you hear the all clear. It's going to be bumpy, but it won't take very long. Artie?
Bernie Grant's arms and legs tingled. His breath came in short gasps, and his heart thudded in his ears. The force of gravity seemed to shift. It lifted his stomach. The lights dimmed, and a subsonic rumble set his teeth on edge. Somewhere on the base, a klaxon blared. Then before he knew it, it was done. The siren stopped. The lights blazed steadily, and his communications board began to glare and blink at him in waves of crimson urgency.
Artie, sound the all clear. Put the power status report up on the display. Now, let's see what kind of mess we have.
Commander Parks for Assistant Commander Grant.
Oh, yeah, put her on.
Grant?
Ma'am, I can't tell you how happy I am to hear from you.
Likewise. Now listen, we made it into a crater just before the pulsar passed. I've hopped up onto the crater's rim, but we can't stay up here for long. It's too hot. We're having problems with our temperature regulator. I found a sweet spot on the crater's side. Not too hot, not too cold. And we'll be all right for now. Can you send a hopper out to do repairs?
Let me check something real quick. We're a little short of power right now. The rescue missions have drained all the hoppers. It's going to be about 8 hours before I can send one. You guys going to be okay?
Sure. We have a full house, but we'll be all right for a day and a half or two.
Did you manage to get them all?
We did.
You're a hero, Commander.
No flattery. You'd have done the same if you'd managed to pass driver's training. Now, I need you to do a few things right away. Get the casualty reports, the damage reports, and most important is this. I want you to address whoever survived.
You want me to address the survivors?
People need comforting and structure right away. We need to gain the trust of everyone as fast as we can. I do it myself, even over the comm, but I have only a few minutes to get back in my hole where I'll be in radio silence.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell them how many of them made it and how many died. Then set the stage for the new normal. And remember, Grant, only the truth. No wild guesses, no false reassurances. If there's something you don't know, tell them so. Looks like we're heating up. I have to hop back down to my hole.
Artie, get me Spider.
Spider here.
Spider, this is Grant.
Have you heard from Commander Parks?
Yes, the commander's safe, but she's stuck in a hole. She'll be out for a couple more days. Charge up one of those empty hoppers and send it to her when you can. Artie will send the coordinates. You can be frugal with the power. It's not an emergency. In the meantime, I'm collecting preliminaries. Do you have any casualties?
Negative.
Damages?
Pretty much what RT predicted. Some damage to the solar arrays, 27-28%. No more landing facilities. One of the Earth-facing observatories was destroyed, but the other was shielded by a bump on the crater. And despite a little burn on its casing, we were able to get some Earth-side images right away.
And?
It's bleak, man. Bleak and horrifying. Transcontinental lightning displays, roiling clouds, large patches of fires. Other than flashes of lightning and fires, its darkness spread all over the land. I could only watch for a couple of minutes.
Listen, are you able to patch those images into the station-wide displays?
Yeah, but everyone would freak out. Why on earth would you want to do that?
Because I have a commission from Commander Parks. She ordered me to tell everybody the truth.
Right. We aren't going home again, are we?
Spider, we are home now. The Earth is in our past. Starting now, we're citizens of the moon.
We're going to need a new anthem.
Huh. Stand by, Spider. Artie, get me Morley.
Life support, Morley.
Morley, this is Grant. Casualties?
None.
Damages?
Negligible.
Excellent. Stand by. Artie, put me on the screens in Meeting Hall 2. Two-way comm. It's time to talk to the tourists. Let the rest of the base listen in. Ladies and gentlemen, can I have your attention? I'm Assistant Commander Grant. Commander Parks has been out saving lives, and she'll be returning in a few days. I'm taking the lead until she gets back. Commander Parks commissioned me to tell you the truth, and that's what I'm here to do. Now, I know that this isn't what you had in mind when you bought a lottery ticket for a trip to the moon. But let's start with the good news. No one on the moon has been harmed, and the damages to our facilities have been minimal.
I thought these trips were supposed to be safe.
Well, I know what you mean, but all things considered, this trip probably saved your life.
When do we get to go home?
As odd as it sounds, we are home.
We're on the moon. I don't live on the moon. I live in Tampa, Florida.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but you're from Tampa, Florida. From here on out, you're a resident of Shackleton. We all of us are. Citizens of the moon.
What could he possibly mean by that?
Do you really expect us to believe all that?
Well, you can believe what you want, but here we are. The event we experienced was unprecedented. We couldn't possibly have planned for it.
And I didn't plan on being abandoned in outer space.
No one's abandoning anybody.
There are 5,000 of us here, and we're all in this together. I know that all of us think of the Earth as our home, and it will always be that in our hearts, but it's no longer a place to which we can return. Spider, display the live feed of what's going on right now on the surface of the Earth. Narrate for us.
Sorry for this, folks. The long, dark stretch on the right of your screen is the eastern seaboard of North America. Those black and red patches on the left of the screen are fires, consuming most of the continent's biomass from the Pacific to the Rockies. Those cyclone-shaped clouds on the right of the screen are weather systems, twice as big as hurricanes and 10 times as strong.
This can't be what's going on right now.
I'm so sorry. It is.
How can they survive?
Most of them can't. Most of them have already died.
We're never going to be rescued, are we?
We don't need rescue. We're not in any danger. But we do need to grow into our new reality.
And how are we going to eat?
Oh, we synthesize food. It's really quite good. Morley and Life Support will explain.
Right. I'm Morley, Life Support. You'll be happy to hear that the moon is self-sufficient. We will none of us starve. We can fatten you up as much as you like. We serve it up, you pound it down.
That's all very well, but frankly, I'm scared.
Yeah, I'm scared too. But look, together, and by together I mean a whole lot of people, together we lifted ourselves off of the face of the Earth. We established ourselves on the moon. We can surely learn to live here. It's going to take some time, but we have a lot of time. Things won't be the same, but then things never were. Things were always changing. Each of us can believe what we want, but maybe it's like the Buddha said. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. And when you realize how perfect everything is, you will tilt your head back and laugh at the sky.
Well, I agree about the laughter. I don't know about this Buddha, but I do know what my mother taught me. If I ever complained at the dinner table, she'd put on this sly little smile and say, "You get what you get, and you don't throw a fit." So, if this is what we got, then this is what we got. Now, since I brought up the subject of dinner...
Morley?
We're eating according to a schedule. Check the display for your times. The map will guide you to the mess hall.
If I may be so ungracious, what are we having?
Turkey with stuffing, mashed potatoes, yams, gravy, and cranberry sauce.
Holy cow! Any pie?
Apple and pumpkin. And, if you like, a slice of green cheese.
And every year, on the anniversary of the crossing, Thanksgiving dinner is served. And not surprising, over the years, the social structure on the moon changed. While they kept up their level of technical expertise, the parameters of social ranking grew much more casual. Eventually, they were all in it together. Parks and Grant fell in love, and every Thanksgiving, they'd sneak off into a quiet corner to dine alone.
Let me turn on this environment. Ah, there you are. Did you bring the wine?
Oui, oui, chérie.
Hey, I wrote something for the occasion, and I'd like to read it to you before we dine.
You did? How sweet. A song? A poem?
No, it's more just a reflection, a paragraph about how things seem to me now.
Ooh, philosophy. Go ahead. I'm all ears.
Okay. If you plopped an 18th century Bedouin into an igloo, he wouldn't recognize the world as the world. His camel jerky and camel milk yogurt would be replaced by seal blubber, tubers, and berries. He would need to trade his linen caftan for furs, and he would no longer shelter from the sun. He would long for it. But some essentially human things would remain. He would have his appetites for food and for adequate shelter, for love and for all the other essential comforts of human company. And just like our Bedouin, here we are. In an utterly different world. We're adrift in space, but we were always adrift in space. It's just that now we're on the lifeboat named the Moon, because our mothership Earth has sunk into the lifelessness of the void. We are Bedouins dancing in the northern lights. We are Eskimos navigating seas of burning sand.
Oh, I love it when you talk dirty.
Pass me the turkey and tell me that you love me almost as much as I love you.
And what are we going to do after dinner?
Well, first we can, And then we can sing each other to sleep. And you can dream of anything you want. And me, I'll dream of the earth. And wake up the man in the moon.
Thanks for joining us. The Crossing was written for the radio by Michael Glaviano and Gary Eyster. Our cast included Mary and Gary Eyster, Susie Newman, Jacqueline Hildebrand, Billy Breed, and Joe Eyster. For the Pictures in My Head Radio Theater, I'm Eric Stein.